Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, thank you for joining us on Human Rights Demand. I've been uploading the interview that I told you we would talk about today regarding the Free West Propra movement. That's West, W-E-S-T, Propra, P-U-P-U-A, movement. I ask all of you to do a Google search for that. West Propra is an area of the world that is greatly oppressed. The West Papuan people live under occupation by Indonesia. It is the site where a genocide happened, and as many as 500,000 or more people of West Papua were killed in that genocide. They are people who are greatly oppressed. They are in their native land. Their native land was found to be rich in rubber and other raw materials that are greatly in demand. Therefore, they are occupied. They are being slaughtered. No Western media, as I understand it, is allowed in West Papua. That's the sign of when oppressors know they are wrong for what they're doing. The press is one of the first things that they want to stop. Freedom of speech and freedom of press are the cornerstone of all the freedoms that we enjoy. If there is an attack against any peoples, the first attack will be against either the artillery or their freedom of information. Oppressors do not like information to flow freely because information is key in uniting people around resistance. So the information systems are one of the first targets when a country is taken over, and that has happened in West Papua. The press is not allowed in that country, as I understand it. So I uploaded two new interviews with West Papua, and they're taking their time loading here at Blog Talk Radio. So we will carry on with our broadcast while they are loading. We are on the air for 2 hours. I cannot see any possible reason for two short MP3 tapes to take 2 hours. So we'll just see what they do today. I've had a great deal of trouble broadcasting from this internet site. And if you've been with us, especially recently, Thursday, you know about some of the challenges that we have. However, it is important in life that we go ahead and do the best we can where we are with what we have. We should have better everything. We deserve better everything. But one person said it, and I'm not going to quote it exactly. I know I'm not. My memory is not that great for all the different quotes that I love to be able to quote them exactly. But this quote goes that, you know, I'm only one, and there's only so much that I can do. But what little I can do, I will do. So that's the important thing, to realize that you have limitations because of the system of oppression that we're operating under. But whatever it is that you can do, that is what you must do. So you go ahead and do what you can under the oppression, whether it's financial oppression or whether it's coming from outside sources. Whatever is oppressing you, you just go ahead and do the best you can where you are with what you have. And everything isn't on you anyway. That's the thing that lots of people forget, that they're not calling the shots. So there's no need of you getting all frustrated when things don't go as they should, because you are not the piper. You are not the piper. You are just a spoke in the wheel. You know, there are people who think, if I attack this one, then I can shut down the program. But I am so glad that we the people are not led by one leader anymore. And let's not ever let ourselves get in that situation where we choose a leader. Let's not ever do that. Because where there is a leader or even a leading group, then that makes that leader or that leading group a target. Oppressors believe that if they take out that one leader or that one leading group, that then they can kill the whole movement. Let's not ever go there again. You know, there was a time when African Americans didn't really have one leader. There were a number of leading groups, and they were all subjected to COINTELPRO targeting. Dr. Martin Luther King was a COINTELPRO target, and it was admitted later in their own documents. Malcolm X was a COINTELPRO target. The Black Panther Party and all its leaders were COINTELPRO targets. And so there were, of course, Puerto Rican leaders. Certain Puerto Rican leaders were COINTELPRO targets, as well as Native Americans and Caucasians and Jews in the peace movement, etc. And before they called it COINTELPRO, it was called something else, but it was the same thing. And that was when J. Edgar Hoover came after Hollywood. So it seems that oppressors in the United States of America have come after just about every group of people who they're interested in shutting down their free speech rights. You know, you can make a lot of public speaking on a movie, producing a play, writing a song. I want to let you know about a comedy show that I highly recommend that HBO produced. It's called John Oliver Prison. John Oliver, O-L-I-B-E-R, Prison. And it's a marvelous show. It's available at YouTube, John Oliver Prison. John Oliver is a comedian, and he uses puppets, and he talked about the prison industrial complex, and he talked about the complexity of it and the corruption in it, and he did it all in comedy, and it's a marvelous HBO-produced show, and as I said, it is at YouTube, and I highly recommend it. He covered pretty much every issue that activists cover. And so I am very pleased that he did that, and he did it with a smile. And so if you want to enjoy comedy, then please go to HBO at YouTube and look for John Oliver Prison. That's a marvelous show. And he makes quite a few very important points in that show. And I am so glad that he taped it. Congratulations, Mr. Oliver, and congratulations, HBO. And so I want you to know that I'm hopeful that these Whisper Pro tapes will be loaded while we discuss what's going on. I want you to know how much I appreciate your joining me today. My name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. And I'm also director of this internet radio channel, Human Rights Demand. And we call it that because of it's named after a quote by Frederick Douglass. He was a great abolitionist of the 1800s. And he said, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. And we believe that here at Human Rights Demand. And every day, Monday through Friday, and many, many Saturdays and Sundays. Today, I understand, is Saturday. It's Saturday, July 26th, 2014. And we make a human rights demand for the people of West Papua that they be given the rights that they should have as indigenous people under the United Nations. Indigenous people have certain rights that I understand are being violated badly in West Papua. So I'll tell you some more about that in a minute. And if we don't listen to the tapes today, we will listen to them tomorrow, because I will get them uploaded for you. You know, the people in West Papua who are trying to work with us to have media, they deserve to have media on the circumstances and situations that they face in their own country. But it's occupied. And as I said, there are certain conventions and articles of the International Declaration of Human Rights that should not be violated for indigenous people. And so West Papua people are the indigenous people there in West Papua. And they are occupied by the Indonesians, who have decided, as I understand it, that they cannot have foreign journalists in their country. I understand that they have other restrictions on their freedom of speech and freedom of press. And so we want to make a human rights demand for the people of West Papua. Again, I ask you to go online for the Free West Papua Movement. You know, I have good news for you, and that is that a man named Kevin Martin, has been exonerated by DNA testing. You know, even forensic evidence can be falsified to win wrongful convictions. Kevin Martin was exonerated of rape and murder after begging for a DNA test for 30 years. Now, Kevin Martin's case marks the fifth time in as many years that federal prosecutors in the district have acknowledged that errors by the elite FBI forensic unit had led to a conviction that should be overturned. So now, this man's evidence had been through forensics examination, and it yielded false results. But the DNA test that he recently was allowed to take, after begging for over 30 years, it did prove that he was not the right person to match with this rape and murder crime. I say to you that may have been an innocent accident, but if even forensics evidence can't be trusted, and as I said, I don't think his evidence had been through DNA testing before, but it had been through forensics. Even forensics labs can lie, cheat, and steal innocent people of their lives. It can steal years out of people's lives when forensics evidence that they receive back from the labs is wrong. And I say to you that I believe sometimes the evidence is deliberately tampered. I've always felt that it was something else going on, not necessarily innocent mistakes sometimes. And that turned out to be exactly true. Absolutely true. That it's not always innocent. His evidence had gone through the FBI lab. And we don't know whether the results were tainted because of accident or design. But in any case, I'm so thankful that Kevin Martin got a new look at that forensic evidence when he passed that DNA test. And I imagine he'll be released. The thing is that some people who pass their DNA test remain in jail. That's why I say I hope he'll be released. We have a person, as a matter of fact, on death row in Alabama, Mr. Thomas Arthur. Thomas Arthur. The last I read about him, he was on death row in Alabama. And this was his position years after he passed his DNA test. So, seeing that some people are kept on death row, are kept in prison years after they take a DNA test and it does not match the crime evidence. It does not match the evidence from the crime scene, their DNA evidence. Well, that's why I say about Mr. Kevin that I hope he's free now, that it's proved not to be him that did the rape and the murder. Because they're keeping Thomas Arthur, and he was cleared in 2009. And this is 5 years later. So that just is an example for you of what's going on in the justice system. You know, the interesting thing is that there are probably hundreds, maybe even thousands of people waiting for approval for their DNA tests on the evidence in their files so they can prove their innocence and be released from prison. There are hundreds and maybe even thousands of people on those waiting lists. And so I want to let you know that the system is not nearly as quick to process requests for DNA tests and actually let inmates have the DNA test as it is to work hard to put someone behind bars. Now, the reason that is, I'll read it to you real quickly. Elite white supremacists, including so-called white liberals, perceive black people like Mr. Kevin Martin as being either their property or their competition. You know, if somebody's your property, you do what you want to with them. And if you're a cutthroat competitor of someone, they don't have to do anything at all because you are in competition with them. Many black people who also deceive and victimize their own race for money have no regard for black victims like Kevin Martin. This man's parents and grandparents, who might have been livid when he went to jail, probably died before he was exonerated. He wasn't even able to help them in their old age or attend their funerals. If he was married and had small children when he was falsely accused of the rape and murder, his wife likely is remarried by now, and his children are approaching middle age. You see how that took his whole life? He was in there 30 years begging for DNA tests. Have you ever noticed that most exonerated black men are not cleared until they are near retirement age? If a person goes in there and they're wrongfully convicted, like between 5,000 and 10,000 people a year are said to be in Georgia, in Florida, in Pennsylvania, in California, in every state throughout the union, all put together, it has been said that between 5,000 and 10,000 of the people who are incarcerated every year, each year, is a wrongfully convicted person. Wrongfully convicted. And so that's quite a few. There's quite a few wrongful convictions. And to think that they're still in there, you know, they went in wrongfully convicted. They've been working on trying to get their appeals, trying to get DNA tests. And it's a long process. And very frustrating. So let me ask you, have you ever noticed that most exonerated black men are not cleared until they near retirement age? This, I say, is intentional. Releasing a few of the tens of thousands of wrongfully convicted people who get sentenced each year does two things. Number one, it keeps the public thinking that the system makes mistakes, but it eventually works it out okay. Well, sometimes it doesn't work it out okay. But that's what the system wants us to think, that it is interested in fairness. And so the system makes mistakes, but eventually corrects itself. That's a lie. The system ignores truth and justice and continually sentencing tens of thousands of wrongly convicted persons every year. You know, the system keeps the public thinking that it makes mistakes and it corrects itself eventually, but that isn't always the case. And number two, space in prison is finite. And prisons must, they might prefer fresher commodities than this 50-year-old plus man. He's probably over 50, maybe even closer to 60. But they want fresh commodities. It's no more than a job that out here in the free world that terminates people wrongly if they are a certain age. So in prison, you know, they release the older African-American men because space in prison is finite and prisons might prefer fresher commodities than this 50-year-old man. The system denied Kevin Martin a DNA test while he was in his 20s, 30s, and 40s, and only agreed to test him when he was approaching old age. The prison system probably used this man up and desires younger laborers. Another reason why the people who are released, who are finally get a chance to prove their innocence, another reason why is because of eugenics. Most inmates who are released because of exoneration or early release programs to reduce overcrowding are middle age or old. When a court orders early release to reduce overcrowding, Did you ever notice they choose old men convicted of oftentimes hard crimes, murder, bank robberies, rather than releasing youths who were convicted of nothing more than nonviolent drug offenses? This is partly because mass incarceration is a eugenics tactic. Eugenics means to hold down the population by preventing sometimes copulation and sometimes preventing birth. So whether you're preventing copulation through the prison system or whether you're preventing birth through sterilization and abortion, all of that is to hold down the population of usually a particular group, class, race of people. That's eugenics. Now, the black men and boys who are behind bars cannot make babies. The black women and girls who are behind bars cannot be impregnated because they are in a separate facility from the men. Now, of course, we've had some few instances where the prison guards got pregnant by the prisoners. We've had a few instances like that, and where the incarcerated women got pregnant in jail. Few instances like that. But generally speaking, jail is an excellent eugenics program because it keeps the sexes separated and living in separate housing units. And so where there is no copulation, there is no worry about the population. When the system feels that a man is likely to want babies, like during his teens and 20s and 30s, they keep them right there behind bars. But then when it appears that they reached an age where they're unlikely to want babies, like Mr. Martin, then they will consider entertaining their request for DNA testing. And if they're proved guilty or if they're proved not guilty, they will exonerate them. They wouldn't do it for this man while he was in his 20s or his 30s or his 40s. You understand? Eugenics is also why homosexuality is pushed in this culture. Young men tell me that gay black youths are significantly more likely to gain employment than straight black men. It is as though the gayness is rewarded among black men. Being gay, that's what young men tell me, is rewarded behavior. Eugenicists will do nearly anything to A, reduce the likelihood of financial success for black people, and B, to keep our population declining, including import new minorities. You know, importing new minorities. So there's a video about eugenics as it pertains to African Americans, and that is MAAFA 21, MAAFA, MAAFA 21 is the name of the movie, it's the name of the documentary, rather, that I would like to invite you to see. You can see it online at YouTube, and you can see it in my Human Rights for Prisons March. I'm going to make it available to you there, the MAAFA 21 movie. It's already in my Legal Victories blog. Ma'afa 21 is the name of this documentary. And it explains to you the eugenics program. And mass incarceration, that's part of its aim, is to hold down an undesired population who happen to be African-Americans. There are other undesired populations, but definitely I think that the movie, and this is not a movie, it's a documentary, they specifically mention the undesirability of African-Americans and Native Americans. So those two are specifically mentioned. And again, I'm looking, and this these two MP3s, and they're only like 7 minutes each. Can you believe that they haven't uploaded yet? All the while we've been talking, they've not uploaded. I have so much trouble trying to pass information through at Blog Talk Radio. It is really phenomenal. It really is. But we will do it. We will do it today, or we will do it tomorrow. But it will be done. The first thing I had to do when I came to Blog Talk Radio was lengthen this program to the 2 hours that it is to be on air. So you see, that's a long time we've got to load this program for today. And if we don't make it today, then it will be available for you for 3 o'clock tomorrow. And again, I want to thank HBO Ready, HBO for John Oliver Prison. That's a comedy that was featured on HBO. It is available at YouTube. John Oliver makes fun of the criminality of corrections. I didn't say, I said the way I meant to say it, the criminality of corrections. The corrections has become an industry, a money-making proposition. And by far and large, the people who are entrapped there are nonviolent people who are arrested for drug offenses and for mental illness. Yes, mental illness is criminalized in the United States of America. We have 1.25 million mentally ill people, people who have different levels and different types of mental diseases, are criminalized in the justice system, and they are incarcerated right now. So that is what's happening, and it's very, very unfortunate, but it is what's going on. And Mr. Oliver put forward the criminality of the justice system in this HBO comedy, and I really liked it. I really am glad that the criminality of the correction system is going public. You know, in Henry County, Georgia, this week, police broke into the house where a woman appeared to be in emotional distress, and of course, they shot her dead. So, you know, please, families, try to deal with your unstable loved ones, if you can, without calling 911. Without calling 911. 911 has been the source of crisis rather than crisis intervention in so many of these cases. The 911, the emergency responders who come, often bring with them a much greater crisis than the one they came to resolve. So just please, if you can, do not call 911 if there is any way around it. If you know, you could wait for the person to sleep, or you could try to talk them down from a distance, you know, from a distance, like you're on the other side of the world and you're on the phone with them. I don't mean stay in the house with a dangerous person, a person who's irrational and armed, especially if they're armed, like this woman was. You don't want to stay in the house and try to talk them down. But you could go to a point of safety and call them and try to talk them down. You could wait until you know they're asleep, whatever. Just work it out. Do what seems to be best to you. But if I were you, I would try not to call 911 because too often we've heard that the police came and killed the person who suffered from mental illness. And this woman who was killed in Georgia, I think it was yesterday or the day before, she did have mental illness. Now, I said our topic today would be the Detroit Water War and how a not guilty verdict in the Wafer murder trial might affect you. Detroit is having a water war. I think that about $89,000 is overdue from different clients. And that's a significant amount of money, $89,000. That's the water bill. And so it's been, the Department of Water has been cutting off families for some time. And now I think around 3,000 households may be without water, or may be without water if you look at as how many have been turned off. But I'm told that sometimes people have the tools to turn the water back on, and for $20, they will use their tools to turn the water main back on immediately and illegally. Okay? So they've shut off a good many customers. But of those they shut off, not that same number is without water today, because they get someone to illegally turn the water back on in some cases. Now, are you familiar with the Wafer murder trial? Mr. Wafer, Theodore Wafer, is a Caucasian man who lived in the area of Detroit, Michigan, I believe. And he's on trial for the murder of Renisha McBride. She was a 19-year-old black woman. And she went to Mr. Wafer's house and knocked on his door because she had car trouble. And he shot her through the door. He shot Renisha McBride. He said he thought she was a threat. And so this trial is going on now, exactly right now. As a matter of fact, I received word that the jury has been selected, and they selected 14 jurors, and of those 14 jurors, only four of them are black people. Only four of them are black people. And that's got to be kind of hard to do in Detroit. But that's the jury that they have. I'm going to let you listen to a little music, and we'll get back to the Wafer trial.
How
So much. That was our Nina Simone singing, I Wish That I Knew What It Would Feel Like to Be Free. And that song, I certainly can relate to what she's saying, and I'm sure a lot of people can. But, you know, there are several reasons why Nina Simone had several reasons, perhaps, for singing that song. For instance, did you know that Nina Simone was a mental patient? Yes. She took, according to her biographers, she took psychotropic drugs in order to try to keep herself on track every day. And so that's Nina Simone. You see, nobody's immune from having mental health problems. We don't have any immunities to that. You know, all it takes is a bump on the head, a serious bump on the head, and you could be mentally incapacitated. It doesn't take a background, a family background in mental illness or anything. If you were brain damaged in a car accident or in a fall in your restroom or anything like that, you could be severely brain damaged just like that. So Nina Simone, I think that she was a bipolar disorder patient. And she was an excellent and gifted, and very, very gifted and sensitive musician. She played concert piano, and she sang beautifully, and she was very socially conscious. And she was also bipolar. You know, the thing is that this system just defines people by their health condition. Suppose someone, you know, told you in their first conversation with you, hi, I'm Mary, and I have kidney failure. Well, you see, the thing is that lots of people have health conditions that you never even know about because they don't define themselves. And the system does not define them by their kidney failure or by their other physical ailments. But when a person has mental illness, they're usually defined by that, you know, if the system can. Because to the system, they would make excellent prison investments. Now, back to Mr. Waper. He's on trial for killing a 19-year-old black woman who came to his door there in Michigan. And they've chosen a jury. They chose 14 people, of which only 4 of them are black. Okay? Now, the deprivation of water has already deeply offended many people in Detroit and throughout America. And it's not over. They have given a 15-day ceasefire on shutoffs. Now, I didn't say they turned anybody's water back on. If the water was off, I think legally it's going to stay off until they pay whatever they need to pay. But they've called a 15-day ceasefire. I call it a ceasefire because it's a water war on shutting off new people. And so this deprivation of water, as I said, is deeply offended many people throughout Detroit, and not only that, but throughout America. And now we have Waper on trial for killing an innocent young black woman who came to his porch, knocked on the door to ask to use his phone, and he just shot her, just blew her away, killed her, okay? She's dead. She's been dead ever since that incident. She didn't go to the hospital and live a while, as far as I understand it. She died at the scene. So to have peace, we must work for justice. I'm very concerned if Waper is not found guilty. If he's found not guilty the way Zimmerman was, and those people in Detroit, especially those people who live in Detroit and who are negatively impacted by this water crisis, I just think it could be a very volatile situation. So I hope that Mr. Waper is convicted. First of all, because he's guilty. If he wasn't guilty, then it really wouldn't matter. I'm for anybody who is innocent and trying to prove their innocence. I stand with anybody who's in that position. And you can look at the listing of people who I've stood beside in my various blogs. I don't look at the race of a person, no race, no creed, no color, no ethnicity, not even social economic status. I look at only the facts as I see them. And the fact is that, you know, this man shot this girl through the door, a young lady who came to his house and asked him to use the phone. I don't believe that this man was scared of a girl at his door. I just don't believe it. And so I think that he needs to be found guilty, and probably that area and maybe even the whole nation can avoid a crisis. Because I feel that, there was a Homeland Security employee online calling for a race war when Zimmerman was on trial for murdering Trayvon Martin. And he was saying on his website, this Department of Homeland Security employee was saying that a race war is inevitable. And I tell you, I don't see a race war as being inevitable. I think that's what elitist white supremacists would like to see. They'd like to see working class blacks, whites, and Native Americans and Hispanics at each other's throats. But what I saw after Zimmerman's acquittal and before his acquittal, what I saw was people uniting across racial lines for justice. That's what I saw. And I put some pictures of that on my blog. So, you know, now, you know, it's just like a water drip. It just keeps hitting the same place over time, over time, over time. So now they've got this man, Wafer, on trial. And he killed a young black person. He killed a young woman, which some people consider far more atrocious. You know, because they teach men, don't hit women, don't brutalize women. And he just shot one. And so I would like to see Mr. Wafer to be convicted for that murder. I would like to see that. On July 10, 2013, a conservative watchdog group published information online which claims that the U.S. Department of Justice sent taxpayer money to Sanford, Florida to support organized protests decrying the killing of Trayvon Martin. And that's according to JudicialWatch.org, the Community Relations Service. A division of the DOJ sent thousands of dollars in public money to assist various groups in their efforts to protest the killing of Trayvon Martin. So in case you doubt me when I say that the system will like to see people at odds over this violence against black people, you can find your evidence right there. You don't have to look any further than that. You know, they're the ones who paid for the initial protest regarding the Trayvon Martin killing. Now, the Detroit residents, they're fighting back after their water shut off, saying it's a life or death situation. The city says a water shut off is essential to recoup 89 million, okay, I had said thousands, but it's $89 million in overdue bills. But the decision has outraged thousands of people in Detroit who've taken matters into their own hands. And for $20, certain men, as I said, who use tools to turn the water back on immediately and illegally, and spare the household from agonizing days spent without showering, cooking, or flushing, that's already been endured by at least 16,000 of their neighbors so far this year. 16,000. So, you know, that's a significant number of people. That you can read about it in The Guardian. The Guardian is giving good coverage to Detroit's water war. In one article, it says, "Welcome to Detroit's water war, in which upward of 150,000 customers late on bills that have increased 119% in the last decade are now threatened with shutoff. Local activists estimate this could impact nearly half of Detroit's mostly poor and black population, between 200,000 and 300,000 people. I want you to know that most African-American voters in Detroit likely voted for the president and other Democrats twice. While they live without water, the president recently asked Congress for $3.7 billion to provide Central American refugees illegally flooding our borders with food, housing, clothes, education, health care, and yes, water. So, you know, the thing is that if you've got 16,000 households without water, it seems to me that should be counted as a major disaster. That is a lot of people. It says, welcome to Detroit's water war, in which upward of 150,000 customers late on bills are now threatened with shutoffs. So the client base who is being either inconvenienced by this or threatened by the water war are going to be cut off. They're going to lose their water and for the lack of $89 million. Children live in those households. Elderly people live in those households, as well as young and relatively healthy people. I think that is approaching a national emergency. Water is a human right. So while the president is asking Congress for $3.7 billion for people who don't really have the legal right to come across the border, I think that somebody should ask for $89 million for Detroit. Somebody should ask for $89 million for the Detroit Water Department so that Detroit residents can keep their water. You know, the Bible says, love others as yourself. It did not tell anyone to love others above themselves. And so I just want to remind you of that. So we've talked about a little bit about the murder of Renisha McBride. And you spell her first name R-E-N-I-S-H-A. And then McBride is M-C-B-R-I-D-E. She was a 19-year-old woman who was killed by Theodore Wafer, W-A-F-E-R. We can get daily updates. Well, actually, they may be more than daily updates. I'm not sure how often Color of Change is updating the public on the Wafer murder trial. But we can get updates on the Wafer murder trial through Color of Change. And I want to so much thank the staff at Color Change and the reporters for making that possible. And so I'm going to do this. I'm going to go off air for a few seconds, and I'm going to see if these audio files with my interview with Whisper Pro will load. And they're still loading on my view. I really want you to hear about what's going on in Whisper Pro and hear it firsthand from a Whisper Pro native, someone who's indigenous to Whisper Pro. I think indigenous people, you know, children have an innate sense of right and wrong. Have you noticed that? They have an innate sense of right and wrong and an innate intolerance for injustice. You know, that's not taught to them necessarily. They have just an innate hatred for injustice, and they have an innate sense for right and wrong. And so sometimes if you go to the park and hear the children play, you might hear one say, I got it first. I got here first. It's mine. I got it. It's mine. You know, when they're running after a ball or whatever, whoever gets there first will proclaim it and claim it loud. They would. And so the thing is that the Whisper Pro people were at Whisper Pro. They were living there. That's their home. That's been their home for you know, centuries. And now their home has been found to have certain precious minerals. And these people, the Indonesians, came in, they occupied their land. You know. And so this happened to Native Americans also here in the United States. You know, they were living here. They had populated this land. There were different nations living in different states. They didn't have borders like America does now. But they had their own society, their own civilization. And I want you to know more about indigenous people here on Turtle Island. That's what this place is called by a great many indigenous people, Turtle Island. And we have their show on Wednesday at 3 p.m. And so you can go to Blog Talk Radio, Human Rights Demand, and listen to some shows that are recorded on different Wednesdays here on Human Rights Demand. And we had a very interesting show on Friday. Friday was Free Speak Blog. Free, F-R-E-E, Speak, S-P-E-A-K, Blog, B-L-O-G. And so I want to thank you all for listening. I'm going to temporarily disconnect. I'll be right back with you. I just want to see whether these tapes are going to be allowed to load. It hadn't happened so far. So thank you, and just hang in there with me. Thank you very much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. This is Mary Neal. This is Human Rights Demand. We seem to have the two tapes by an individual from the Free West for Prom movement uploaded. And I will go ahead and let you hear with me the first tape now. And we have interviewed this individual before, and that was on the National Network in Action broadcast. We started our interest in people who were Native Americans or people who were indigenous to other areas and who were subject to brutalization, occupation last year. So we already interviewed this individual before, and now this is tape one of his second interview.
I would like to thank to Mary and to those who would like to listen my story, or the story of the people of West Papua, or the story of Nation, 307 tribes on behalf of the people of West Papua. Before that, I would like to thank in my language, the conditions of the indigenous people of West Papua today is getting worse. Why I said worse? Because where there is a pure voice of indigenous people want to tell the world about the conflict or how we've been under the occupations of Indonesia to the world. The Indonesian government and an armed forces worked very hard to ban and put submission law as a license to kill West Papua. They never want to allow the people of West Papua to do a rally on the public with many reasons. They always say the organizations which are, you are organizing is illegal, so you can't. And then there some more reason also when the activists or the students of West Papua want to do protests or on the public area, they are arrested. Even the rally is organized by the students, but the police officers would come to the campus to arrest them. The lecturers do nothing, even it's forbidden for the armed forces entering the campus area. As we know that Indonesia is the third biggest democratic country, which means whoever wants to express ideas publicly, they are welcome. But for my people are not welcome. Indonesia is making a big lie to the world that it is a democratic country. The foreign journalists can access in West Papua since West Papua had been annexed to Indonesia in 1963 before the Act of Free Choice. So the world doesn't know about the situation in West Papua. And now, not only that, but the freedom of expression is banned. President of Indonesia, SBY, claims that Indonesia is the third largest democratic country. But for my people, cannot express their idea or their political right. When the students of West Papua want to express their idea to do a protest in the public area, they are not allowed. Even it's the right of every person. The United Nations admits this law of freedom of expression, but it doesn't happen to the people of West Papua when other state of Indonesia does. When Indonesia also adopted already and the people of West Papua can express their political rights on public. When they do, they would be captured and arrested and they put in the jail for more than 3 years. Example is one of the elder is Philip Karma. He's in prison for more than just 15 years for raising morning stuff like that's my flag. The political prisoners are increasing today. It was 40 people, but it is increasing until 76 political prisoners of West Papua today. It will never get better unless the people of West Papua gets full independence, because what the people of West Papua want is freedom. The freedom that you enjoy your everyday life. That's a root problem to the people of West Papua.
Well, thank you. And now we're going to go right into the next tape.
UN knows about what's been happening to the people of West Papua by Indonesian armed forces since 1963, because human rights violations started when Indonesia took over West Papua. For nowadays, UN is doing nothing to stop the cry of the people of West Papua. It's very shameful to UN because they betray the rights of the people of West Papua, which means my people had never had a full right to practice the self-determination where you call one man, one vote. But they did it as handpicked as a representative of 307 tribes. They failed to help the rights of the people of West Papua. My people had never welcomed Indonesian to West Papua. Since then, my people keep fighting for political independence. Until today, the current situation or current event today, there have been an official statement by an independent leader as well as a tribal leader, Benny Wenda, a diplomat, a co-founder of a previous Papua campaign based in UK, to the people of West Papua that not to vote for or to boycott for the president elections of Indonesia. in 2014 today, in this year, the people of West Papua did as he stated, as an 80% of West Papuans boycotted, but 20% voted. They're not even Indonesian. They're not even West Papuan, but Indonesian, there, who had been there for more than 100 years, or more than 60 or 30 years. My people are refused saying when we vote for President of Indonesia, the conflict of West Papua will never be dealt until it's going to be a sixth president of Indonesia. They said we will vote for self-determination for West Papua when we vote for President of Indonesia. They even kill us, so we'd better not to vote. So they did what they said. The we believe in this, and we never stop fighting for our freedom. As Indonesian constitution says, freedom is the rights of the nation. Therefore, colonialism, slavery on this universe has to be paired or stopped, because not according to human rights and justice. When the president's candidate was asked about the conflict in Gaza, he addressed that our constitutions, the constitutions of Indonesia, is freedom, is the rights of the every nation. This president has had been elected. He's going to be president this year. His name is Joko Widodo. Funny thing is, when the ongoing conflict of West Papua is not dealt, but he wants to bring the Palestine issue to UN to support self-determination, when West Papua are campaigning for self-determination. That's all for now, and for the current situations. In addition, the situation in West Papua today is every day has been killed. Every day, when the students or when the activists or do rally or do protests on the outside of the world, they always captured, beaten up by police or armed forces of Indonesia. So there are thousands of police in West Papua, and thousands of militaries and detachment ADA, and there are more in West Papua to control West Papua. So being in our homeland is like being outside of other people's country. So we need so as I said, what the people of West Papua want is freedom. So when West Papua don't get freedom, they will never stop crying, or they will never stop fighting for freedom. So I really, really need your help. My message to you is to please tell the world about what's happening. Tell your friends, tell your family. We believe that America is a democratic country, the biggest democratic country, and you believe in liberty and the fundamental rights of the people. So please listen our voice. My people had been crying for more than 50 years. So we need we want freedom, because we know that it's not because of the law, but it's a fundamental right, and it's a God-given right for every nation. And that is the root problem. So thank you for listening to my story, the story of 307 tribes. Wah, wah, wah.
Well, thank you very much. You know, the people of West Papua, you heard him say that the number of political activists that they have behind bars has risen from being around 40 to roughly 80 right now. So people are risking quite a good deal when they come online to tell us about the circumstances of their occupation in West Purpura. And I want to thank you for joining us today on Human Rights Demand. We make a demand for the human rights of the people in West Purpura, the indigenous people of West Purpura, because as little children say, mine, mine, I got here first. And so that's the way we need to look at it, because that is the way it is. It belongs to the West Purpura people. They're indigenous to that land, and they are being occupied by the people of Indonesia. The Indonesian army is right in their country, and they're occupied. There has been genocide, and there are still people killed there on a regular basis if they have the nerve to protest for their loss of human rights. And so protests are very often answered with violence by the people who occupy their land, the Indonesians. So we want to thank you for joining us today on Human Rights Demand. There's lots more information that I could share with you, but I don't think I will at this time. I do want to say that Ms. Angela Corey continues to prosecute and persecute Marissa Alexander. We received negative news about Marissa Alexander recently, and that is that she will not be allowed, she's not allowed to use the Stand Your Ground law. She's not allowed to use that defense at trial. So that is very negative news. Stand Your Ground law. I heard numerous people say when Zimmerman used that defense that blacks weren't allowed to use it. And I've got to admit that it seems to be the case. It seems to be the case. Marissa Alexander, as you know, is the black woman who was prosecuted and arrested, sentenced to 20 years for just firing a warning shot to let her ex-husband know that she refused to accept what could be a fatal beating. She had been beaten by him before and had been put in the hospital for previous beatings by him. And this time she was right out of the hospital after giving birth to a new child. And all women know that their bodies are most vulnerable after birth, most vulnerable. If he had hit her in the right place just once, she could have bled to death. So she refused to take that potentially fatal beating from him, and she shot a warning shot to let him know that she was armed and serious about it. And they put her in prison for 20 years. Well, the people rallied around Marissa Alexander to the point that she was given a retrial. Unfortunately, it looks like the retrial is going to be a situation where there's no attempt at fairness. Because if the state of Florida has a Stand Your Ground law, it seems to me that all people who are residents of a state should be able to use that law. And the judge and jury should make their determinations according to the law. But Marissa Alexander will not be able to use the Stand Your Ground law in her defense. So that is very unfortunate. You know, we talked to you on Thursday about three teenagers who killed homeless people in Albuquerque, New Mexico. They beat three. They killed two of them. and they admitted to 50 other attacks on homeless people. And so these are teenagers, and they have been attacking homeless people, people who are outdoors, sleeping on the ground, no covering for them whatsoever. They don't have a door to go inside and lock at night. I have a door to go inside and lock, but somebody else evidently has my door keys. They come in and remove what they will. They have removed the Cochran firm lawsuit, the lawsuit I filed against the Jenny Cochran firm, and numerous boxes of evidence that I had for you that was hard copies. Thank God they cannot, will not, and shall not ever get the flash drives and the data files, because they're in numerous people's hands. You know, you can't very well tell somebody, here, take these boxes home and make storage room for them at your house. But when it comes to flash drives, something so little that you could put in your pocket and say, you know, here's another flash drive, put it with the others. That's the kind of way you have to save your data on flash drives and on disks. And so I thank God for making it easy for people to be able to save lots of data on one little flash drive, lots of data on one little disk. Praise God for that, because these people will break in your house and steal your evidence. And homeless people don't even have a house. So their possessions, everything they own is just out there all the time, just completely at the mercy of thieves. And even their own body is at the mercy of people. You know, we started out talking about Mr. Kevin Martin, who was wrongfully convicted, and he was released from prison. No, he wasn't. Not yet. We don't know whether they'll release him. He's been exonerated of the murder and rape for which he was charged. We don't know if he'll be released or not. We do know that they sometimes have in the past kept people even when they've been cleared by DNA evidence. And I told you about Thomas Offa, who was cleared. The DNA test that he took cleared him of being the murderer. And that was in 2009. And as far as I know, he's still on death row today. So this system apparently treats one person one way and another person another way. And it has absolutely nothing to do with guilt or innocence. And I want you to know, we very often say the system is racist, and it is, but that's not the only thing that's going on, because Mr. Thomas Offa is a Caucasian man. So now we have Mr. Kevin Martin. He's a black man. He's been exonerated after 30 years. He's been begging for a DNA test for 30 years, and he's been refused for 30 years. But now, I guess he's old enough that he may not try to have babies. And so he's not as much of a risk as he was in his 20s and 30s and 40s. However, we do know that men can have become fathers in their 50s. And I tell you right now, I hope that this man finds a lovely wife and one who's young and fertile and has as many children as he feels comfortable with before he quits having children, because eugenics is going on. That's why black men and black women are locked away during their childbearing years. It's eugenics. I gave you the name of a movie I'd like for you to see to learn more about why mass incarceration is happening. And that is called Maafa, M-A-A-F-A, 21, Maafa, 21. And you can see, you can hear the so-called white liberals talking about how important it is to keep black people's numbers reduced. And so that's also why most of the abortion clinics are set up in African-American neighborhoods, and it's also why a great many African-Americans, especially the young, are piled up in prisons and jails. And even, as I said, even if a judge declares that the prison or jail is overcrowded and they must release some prisoners, they release older people who were charged with much more serious crimes. They'd rather release an old murderer than a young marijuana smoker. Now, if you hadn't noticed that, I want you to start noticing that. And then next we heard from WESPRPRA, the Free WESPRPRA movement. We heard from one of its members talking about the oppression that they live under in WESPRPRA. And because it does matter to racists, I want to invite you to go online and look at the people in WESPRPRA. And they look exactly, to my idea, like African Americans. They're near Australia, but the Australian indigenous people look peculiar unto themselves. I don't know anyone else who looks quite like the Australian indigenous people. But the people of WESPRPRA look exactly like African Americans. And I think that that may be why their quest for freedom and justice is so ignored, because I'm new to this understanding of how much racism plays a part in decisions. And so the last thing we told you about is about Angela Corey, who's the district attorney in Florida, is prosecuting Ms. Marissa Alexander. And Marissa Alexander was told last week or this week that she would not be able to use the stand your ground defense at all. So those are just some of the news stories that are happening. I could go on, but you know, when I give too much information, you don't have a chance to digest it. You don't have really a chance to digest the information. I want to remind you, Christian Prison Ministries, that most of the innocent people who were wrongfully convicted, which number between 5,000 to 10,000 per year, are Christians, and they have Christian relatives praying for their release. When you help the Innocence Project free the innocent, no matter who they are, I believe you will be blessed. So send generous donations to the Innocence Project, who are involved in the work of freeing the innocent, no matter who they are. I want to say to everybody that I don't know whose quote this is, but it's a very good one. It says, your life is made of two dates and a dash. Make the most of the dash. And with that, I will turn you back over to Ms. Nina Simone to entertain you once again. And I wish you well. Have a beautiful Saturday. And God bless you very much.
Could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart.